haven't they haven't really followed through with that.
Right. Okay. So do you want to go back to, I guess.
I first knew it in 1958. You know, not when I was in high school, we came into the city a lot, but not so much to the village, other places, like the zoo.
Oh, here's your page. Yeah.
Okay, so in 58, my husband started working in theater. I got a job at the Sheridan Square Playhouse, which was Christopher Street, the Christopher Street stop. It's now called The Garage, and I don't know what it is. I think it's a restaurant. But at any rate, what was the village like then? It was, rents weren't nearly as high. Artists could still get an apartment there if they were lucky, but it was getting hard. It was changing from the 20s, which had been when it really flourished as a inexpensive place that attracted artists. And everybody was talking about the change and upset about the change and upset about gentrification. It was still quite, but it was very different than it is now, not nearly as gentrified. It was also more dangerous. New York in general had so much more crime than we do now. As my husband worked at the Sheridan Square and got in charge of the money, again, people didn't have credit cards in those days, so everything was done with cash. And he got a gun permit because he often had to take the money that had been collected at the box office and deposit it late at night after the show. And there just wasn't any question that he would need that. I have somewhere, and I wish I could find it again, my husband was Italian, and his picture looks more like mafioso goon than anything you've ever seen. And I've always looked at it and thought, you gave this man a gun permit?
Well, a lot of people were probably asking for permits in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
But Greenwich Village was particularly dangerous, or was it like, was there a line between, was it 14th Street, or was it closer to the river? Like, where was kind of the
I'm not even sure, because I only know the part that we knew, which was, you know, moderately dangerous, certainly more dangerous than the Upper West Side, where we had our apartment. Was dirtier than it is now, mm-hmm. but also more energetic. There were many, many small theaters, and lots of our actor friends were in off-Broadway productions, off-Broadway productions, sometimes moved then into Broadway if you could have the money to keep going. That was often the criteria for actors who made it, and or directors or whoever, script writers who made it and who didn't, was the money to get you by when you weren't making much, because off-Broadway and even the Sheridan Square, which was off-Broadway, was not a moneymaker, to say the least, but it was a showcase. And if you had a way to keep going, a lot of careers that started there became successful. And a lot petered out because people had to quit and take regular jobs. A lot of off-Broadway actors had a second job, and my husband always advised young actors and actresses, get a second job, something you can do. The most successful often were RNs, nurses, because there's always a demand for trained nurses in hospitals, and it's something you can pick up and drop and pick up and drop. You know, quite a few off-Broadway actors who did that. What else about it? There was a tremendous energy that I don't feel now, but I'm not part of that world, so maybe it's still there. There seemed to be more theaters then, more
Really?
Of everything, but perhaps not. That might just be my impression.
No, it's my impression too. But also I feel like my idea of Greenwich Village in 1958 is really romanticized. Mm-hmm. So when you said that people were upset about the change in 58 and wishing it was the 20s, that's just so bizarre to me, because I'm sitting here like, yeah. Whenever I walk through Washington Square Park, I pretend it's the late 50s or early 60s, just to kind of feel that, that energy again.
Well, certainly different than now. I mean, all over New York, people do nothing but complain about change.
Yeah.
All over New York. That's always been true. New York, I mean, from colonial times, New York had the reputation of a city that tore itself down and rebuilt itself all the time. Partly because land, you can't just keep expanding. Like Boston just kept moving out one square after another, and then another square, and then another square. You can't do that in New York. So we've always been a tear it down, redo it, change it.
Did you go to the Sheridan Square Theater a lot?
Oh, sure, because my husband was stage manager, and we often invited, that was the way we entertained. We'd invite friends to a show, and then they'd come up to the apartment afterwards, we'd have dinner. Yes, I spent a lot of time in the Sheridan Square Playhouse, a lot of time. And there wasn't a lot of money. The productions were always strapped for cash, as creative as could be, which is one thing I actually loved. I personally love stage magic rather than what you will see, especially on Broadway now, are these tremendously complicated effects. When we saw, my niece and myself saw Wicked, which we both hated.
Seriously?
Seriously.
But it's catchy.
Hated. I hated the music, couldn't understand the dialogue, but the effects were remarkable.
Yeah.
It's not the kind of effect I love. As a high school kid, we were offered, I was in high school from 46 to 50, new school tickets at a deep discount, and you got a series of four or six or whatever not plays to go to. And they always were very much in the spirit of stage magic, you know. A door became just 2x4s and so on and so forth. So Off-Broadway was very much like that. There wasn't a lot of money in it, but there was an awful lot of creativity in it.
You were saying earlier that to be a successful actor, to make it to Broadway, it was a money game.
Always.
Yeah, but was that attitude present in the Greenwich Village Theater? Was it still kind of we're here until, like, we're here but we're hoping to be uptown? Or
yes.
What do you think performers were
happy
to?
Most of them wanted to move up because it wasn't a living wage. It wasn't, I mean, it's fine. A lot of them were young and, you know, for a while you can live on nothing, but eventually you want to put food on the table, you get very thin.
Yeah, so it's much easier as an audience member to appreciate the stage magic than probably someone who had to deal with that. I want to know, like, I want to hear about a night where, like, after a show at the theater, you went and got dinner and went. Like, I want places. Where would you go to eat, and what was the atmosphere like, and was the service good, or, you know, things like that?
Well, my husband's favorite place to go was McGowan's Bar, which may or may not be there. I don't remember them serving food, but there was a crowd there that knew each other. They gathered most nights. The only time they didn't gather was New Year's Eve, which one of the McGowan's regulars said was for amateurs and he wouldn't have anything to do with it. In other words, he went drinking every night. He was a serious drinker. But New Year's Eve, you got all the amateur drinkers, and he didn't want anything to do with them. So there are a lot of regulars there. It was very friendly and dark and low tech, and it was nice. It had the feeling of a real neighborhood gathering place. And I don't know if a lot of people from off-Broadway went there. I wouldn't be surprised, because it did seem to fill up at 11:30 when shows ended and people wanted a drink before going home. There was the story I remember most about McGowan's is how active the mafia was back then. That they had this, you know, as I say, not very profitable, nice neighborhood bar, and the mafia came to visit and said they would have to employ a mafia service for napkins or garbage collection or something like that. And it turned into a real thing. I think they got out of it somehow, but it was more expensive, of course, because they were taking a cut. But that sort of casual crime was, you know, par for the course, sort of. You just dealt with it as best you could. You either bought the mafia services or you
got a gun permit
or mostly with the mafia you found if you had a contact who could say, you know, let McGowan's alone, it's not worth the trouble, something like that. Yeah, we knew one actor who'd gotten murdered on the way home. It always made me very nervous when my husband was late. There was just, subways weren't nearly as nice, stations weren't nearly as nice. But there was a lot of energy, creative energy. I didn't know the art scene particularly, because we were really just in theater. I'm sure was there and was very, very active. But it was getting, rents were going up already.
When I think about the energy in the village at that time, I think of boisterous, like loud voices and just people dropping a lot of social formalities that there are now, like talking to store owners and feeling
yes.
comfortable getting to know strangers.
Yes.
But
also
dirty.
Be more wary.
And, yeah, exactly, and
yes.
dangerous. So,
yes.
So how do those two things coincide? And also, do they kind of bring out one another? Like,
that's a good question. I'm not sure.
There's like a Dylan line that I really like. When you've got nothing, you've got nothing to lose.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
If the living standards are kind of looked down upon, does that make you more free? Like, does the freedom cause the positive energy as well as the negative energy? Do you think it's possible to?
Yes, I think definitely it does. I think the awareness that, you know, you could be mugged or even hurt badly, increased both negative and positive energy in a way. People who knew each other sort of glommed together, and then you always, you know, had your eye out for, it wasn't so much drugs in those days, it was drunkenness and general. You had to be careful. You had to be very careful. But I went there and I went home late at night and, you know, I didn't really worry about it, but you were aware. You were careful. Yeah, I think it did cause, like, it was nice to get to McGowan's and see old friends and whatnot.
Yeah. That's been something I've been trying to figure out because it goes along with the fantasy of what Greenwich Village used to be. Because it's not as great as I think it was because of that constant threat.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it wasn't ideal.
But it does create a sense of solidarity, like, you know, friends glomming together and trying to feel safe in the company of one another. And also, like, I really love reading the Beats, like, that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always talking about winding up in the apartment of the jazz musician that they saw. Just, like,
yes.
finding...
There was a lot of that. There was a lot of that. Yes, 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 yes. of course, Jack was... I didn't know him, but must have been playing at the Vanguard then. Yes.
Do you like to think about that? Like the places you could have been together without...
Yeah. I remember once Jack and I went to one of those, I mean, Gigi and I, my first husband, went to one of those clubs, going down the steep stairs, and can't even remember what it was or where it was, but it could have been the Vanguard as much as anything else.
As much as Cornelia Street Cafe.
Yeah.
Right? Those steep stairs.
Yes, 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 yes. And then there was, you know, higher class stuff was moving in. I remember one restaurant that had an open fire pit in the middle, you know, that was vented and was pretty expensive and upscale, and that was coming in too. So the village was a real mix, much more of a mix than anywhere else in the city. Fifth Avenue was the big stores where we lived, where in the Upper West Side were the big apartment houses with lots of families and small stores along Broadway. So it was a very distinct area, very distinct. You got to the village, you felt the difference, which was both exciting and, you know, watch your back. for a short time we had an apartment in the village near the Sheridan Square, but it was, when the second child arrived, it was just too small. It was a converted brownstone and it wasn't very big, and the construction was horrible. Just horrible. They had converted a brownstone and put sheetrock between apartments. I swear, if my neighbor put in a nail to hang a picture, I could have hung my picture on the other end of it, because it would come through the wall. When the second child was on the way, then we looked for a bigger place and found the Upper West Side, which I'd never known anything about.
I
came from Queens. Who knew about the Upper West Side? I was just amazed. For the same price we paid in the village, we got an apartment up there that was about twice as big, with a nice park nearby and all kinds of things. But they were both cheap.
Hard to believe.
I know. $160 a month for the one in the village and the one at the Upper West Side. And the one on the Upper West Side had two bedrooms and a dining room and a living room and an eat-in kitchen. And the one in the village had a living room, a closet kitchen, and a bedroom.
Yeah.
So the village was already getting expensive.
Obviously, the village was noisier, right?
Yes. Oh, yes. And it was with a kid, because Danny was two when we lived down there. The only park was Washington Square Park, and there was one decent playground in it and a whole lot of
seedy stuff.
Yeah, seedy stuff. And then the Upper West Side had Riverside, Hudson River Park all along Riverside Drive, with two great playgrounds and a water playground, and it was just very different.
When did you begin to notice how the village was getting cleaned up?
It happened gradually, sort of like the Hudson River. You hear about it. But gentrification, you know, as those apartments got more expensive, it changes the kinds of people who could rent them. As I said, we were out of that price range when did we move? We moved in 60. By the 60s, I looked, you know, everywhere for an apartment and two-bedroom apartment. Could only find it on the Upper West Side. Couldn't find anything we could afford in the village. So it was already changing, and with those changes come other changes, some good and some bad.
Yep.
And then the Upper West Side gentrified.
Big time.
Big time. Big time.
Even, yeah, it still feels magical to me. And I've been trying to immerse myself in the old Greenwich Village or trying to find it. But obviously, I'm noticing more and more that there's a big gap between the reality of what happened and what I think happened, mm-hmm. and then also a big gap of what I hope to see now and what I'm actually seeing. Mm-hmm. And that's why these stories are so good, because they kind of fill the gap.
Mm-hmm. One nice thing at the Sheridan Square, of course, police were very important to you, and there was a cop on the beat. They still had cops on the beat called Vincent, who was Jewish, which is very unusual for cops. the people at the Sheridan Square loved him, loved Vincent. He would, you know, stick his head in when he was doing his rounds, make sure everything was okay. He was funny, he was nice, he was smart. He was a smart cop. And you always felt safer when knowing Vincent was on the beat and whatnot. But again, it was that kind of area where you were glad to have a cop stick his head in and say, everything okay? I know, just...
Hard to believe.
Very different. Yeah. Very different. Wasn't true there were no cops on the beat on the Upper West Side. But down there, especially at night, it got rowdy enough and dangerous enough, so there were cops on the street. Yeah. I guess when I really was going down there was, as I say, starting in 58. And then gradually my husband's job moved uptown. He was stage managing Broadway. The last few jobs was a Broadway musical, because again, there was enough money. Besides, that's what everyone wanted to do. They wanted to move from, you know, off Broadway to off Broadway. That was a move, off Broadway to Broadway.
Who would have
or
wanted
Hollywood.
To move down?
Hmm?
What career group or personality group would want to if there was any?
I can't think of any.
Yeah.
I can't think of any. Occasionally, an established actor would want to get on stage again and would do an off-Broadway show. Occasionally, in a limited, like Cicely Tyson did an off-Broadway show because she loved the part and she wanted to get on stage again. That would be occasional. I know about that one because my husband stage managed it and she was a pain in the tuchus. She always came late and drove everybody crazy. But yeah, so that would happen occasionally that someone with a name would be in the show, and for whatever reasons, and usually it would be a limited run. You know, so this big name would be there for so many weeks and then go. Yeah, it was an exciting time.
But you know, everybody's memories are flavored by what's happening in their own lives. It was an exciting time for me. We were young.
Having children.
having children, finding careers, making friends. We had been in Pittsburgh first because he was drafted. Carmel, California for his second aid of training. Then Augusta, Georgia for a year and a half. Then Pittsburgh where he took got his advanced degree, and then Forest Hills with my parents for a year, and then into the Village, and then up to the West Side. So
the Village was kind of your first breath of fresh air for a long time.
Yes.
And that might be a common thread. You know, a lot of people I've been interviewing have very similar, you know, it was their first real taste of freedom, or where they found their best job, or husband or wife.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm interviewing people who want to talk about the Village, and I feel like, yeah. You're right, it's all flavored.
Yeah, you always put it through your own lens. And as I say, I was worried about safety because my husband came home late every night, and I said we knew an actor friend who had gotten murdered on the way home. So the fact that it was dangerous was very much probably perhaps more on my mind than anyone else's.
Did he ever end up getting a gun?
Hmm?
He ended up getting a gun?
My husband?
Yeah.
Yeah, he got the gun permit, as I told you. I've got to find that permit. They gave this guy a gun. I can't believe it. But yes, he had a gun permit. He never brought it home. He always left it at the Sheridan Square in case they got robbed or whatnot.
I'm going to look into McAllen's. See if it's still.
So if it's still there. It'll be changed, I'm sure. It'll be not the old wooden floor and dim lights and crowd, but it was a nice place. A real after theater gathering, not like Sardi's that was for
Sorry.
The people who are making money.
Do you know? Okay, I'm done with the interview. If you feel. Do you know Irene Gandhi?